Hello, and welcome back to the Telltale Heart, the Pharmacist Cardiovascular Digest from Pharmacy Times. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Beavers, and today I welcome you back. And I'm going to dive in a solo episode today on one of the most recent cardiovascular guidance documents released this year. But first, I always want to remind, if you like our podcast, like, subscribe, send messages, email us, let us know. If you want to be a guest, please, please, please give us feedback. Let us know how we can continue to change and improve and do stuff different. I know it's almost meeting season. We'll be covering a lot of different things over the next several months, such as the next few episodes in the next few weeks. We'll gear up and talk about the European Society of Cardiology meeting, what's on deck for this. But today, let's transition. I'm going to talk about the 2026 American College of Cardiology Expert Consensus Decision Pathway on the Management of Heart Failure with Preserved Ejection Fraction, and this was recently published in JACC. If you're a cardiology pharmacist, or honestly, any pharmacist or any clinician who manages patients with hypertension, diabetes, obesity, atrial fibrillation, chronic kidney disease, or heart failure, you already are taking care of HFpEF patients every day. The challenge is that many of them haven't actually been diagnosed, and today we're going to go through this, and I'm going to talk about why the document matters, what's actually new, how recommendations have evolved, most importantly, for pharmacists, how you should be doing things differently after you hear this. So first and foremost, the question at hand, why another heart failure preserved or HFpEF document? For years, HFpEF was considered the heart failure we couldn't treat. Patients accumulated diagnoses of hypertension, obesity, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, atrial fibrillation, essentially what we call today cardiokidney metabolic disease. Then they developed dyspnea. They were hospitalized repeatedly. Yet we had very few therapies that clearly improved outcomes, as the agents that we've used in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction didn't always translate into that. That has changed dramatically over the last few years. The therapeutic landscape has transformed dramatically, as I just noted, over the last 5 years. We now have multiple disease-modifying therapies. We've worked on improving our phenotyping, and perhaps most importantly, recognition of HFpEF is not one disease. It's a syndrome. Falls in the line of heart failure as a syndrome. And the new consensus recognizes or reflects a shift. Rather than asking, does the patient have HFpEF? The document asks, what phenotype of HFpEF does the patient have? And we've talked about this in the past, but it really cements this. And what therapies target those underlying drivers? What has changed since the previous guidance? One of the biggest philosophical changes is moving away from ejection fraction alone. Historically, HFpEF has meant an ejection fraction of greater than or equal to 50%. Today, that number is only one small part of the diagnosis. Instead, clinicians are encouraged to integrate symptoms. Structural heart disease or amyloid, if it has a byproduct or a different type of HFpEF or construct of a cardiomyopathy, to think about that. Natriuretic peptides, filling pressures, exercise physiology, imaging, clinical phenotype. The diagnosis has become much more nuanced. This is actually good news for pharmacists because we often recognize these patients long before the cardiology referral or have the potential to. So diagnosing HFpEF, one of the highlights of the paper is the emphasis on structural diagnostic approaches rather than relying on a single echocardiogram. The consensus does highlight various tools and the pros and cons of these tools, such as the H2FPEF score or the HFA-PEFF algorithm to estimate diagnostic probability. Many patients will also require other testing, potentially, that will not be in the pharmacist domain, but will encourage our pharmacists to understand the outputs and the translation of these, such as exercise testing, invasive hemodynamics, advanced imaging, particularly when symptoms remain unexplained. This reinforces something pharmacists often reserve. Many patients treated repeatedly with diuretics never go under a comprehensive examination or evaluation. Most importantly, in the dialogue that we've talked a decent amount on this podcast and continues to come up, is heart failure heart failure preserved ejection fraction is a cardiometabolic disease. One of my favorite sections emphasizes this. HFpEF isn't simply just heart failure. It's contributory or tied to its obesity, its inflammation, its insulin resistance, its renal dysfunction, its hypertension, its endothelial dysfunction, its microvascular disease, its systemic congestion. And the document repeatedly emphasizes the management of these upstream drivers rather than treating just congestion alone. As we've seen consistently in HFpEF, when you think about therapy and tying all this together, SGLT2 inhibitors have still become the foundation or the clearest recommendation. They remain the foundation of therapy in all heart failure because they go across all different diabetes or all different types of heart failure. But as you notice, regardless of diabetes status, you were going to give them an SGLT2 inhibitor. The recommendation continues to be strengthened because of consistent reductions in heart failure hospitalizations, quality of life improvements, symptom improvements, and renal protection. So trials including the EMPEROR Preserved and DELIVER trials fundamentally change HFpEF treatment, and the consensus reflect these agents so you can be continued early and not has rescue therapy after admissions. And we have decent data to suggest the power of these agents. So interesting enough, speaking of agents that historically started their domain in diabetes, the GLP-1 receptor agonists enter the conversation. This is a major update and inclusion in terms of the obesity management as the disease-modifying therapy. And this is a major evolution. Historically, weight loss was recommended. Today, intentional pharmacological weight reduction becomes part of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction management. Recent evidence demonstrating improved symptoms, exercise capacity, inflammation, and quality of life among patients with obesity-related HFpEF has elevated GLP-1 receptor agonists into the discussion for appropriate patients. For pharmacists, this is huge. We often manage these medications already, whether we're titrating them, whether we're getting access, whether we're dispensing them. And now we're thinking beyond glycemic control or weight reduction. We're thinking about improving HFpEF symptoms and functional status. This is another giant change with the mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists. MRAs remain important. Not every patient qualifies, but appropriate patient derives benefits. However, what they have elevated in this document is that the non-steroidal MRAs, such as finerenone, actually have a seat at the table equivocal to the SGLT2 inhibitors based on the Feinhardt's data. It clearly demonstrates, even when you put the totality of MRAs data in there, there is some benefit in terms of reducing hospitalizations and other side comorbidities. But then you think about benefits like reduction in atrial fibrillation and diabetes, as we've alluded to. Non-steroidal MRAs kind of get elevated in that from this particular standpoint in the document. And because there's been some question or challenges with spironolactone based on the recent SPIRIT trial, based on TOPCAT, and we're awaiting other data, the non-steroidal MRAs, or finerenone, has gotten an elevated level in this particular document. Now, that being said, if cost is a concern, they do recommend the other agents. But when you really balance out safety and efficacy at the current moment, and non-steroidal MRAs are recommended. Other things they talk about include blood pressure control. The consensus reiterates that uncontrolled hypertension remains one of the most contributors or largest contributors to HFpEF progression. This seems obvious, yet many hospitalized heart failure preserved ejection fraction patients still have systolic blood pressures 150 or higher. And this ties in line with our new recent hypertension guidelines that have come out, as well as the cardiokidney metabolic guidelines. And aggressive blood pressure optimization remains a cornerstone, not just for prevention of stroke, but helping with ventricular remodeling, improved symptoms, and even as we've seen in the hypertension guideline, it helps with dementia. Atrial fibrillation gets a decent amount of attention in this document. And why? Because rhythm matters. Many HFpEF patients experience dramatic symptom improvement when sinus rhythm is restored, and rate control may not be enough. And this document encourages careful rhythm management and referral when appropriate with multidisciplinary collaboration. As we've seen in the EP world, and we've talked even after trials after ACC and Dr. Kristen Bova-Campbell and others, ablation strategies have become more and more and common from that standpoint. One pharmacist or section pharmacists shouldn't overlook, and I alluded to this earlier, is mimickers or other things. When patients don't fit the usual HFpEF phenotype, think infiltrative disease. Think ATTR, cardiac amyloidosis. Think when you see these things or you have patients with those signs and symptoms like bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome, lumbar spinal stenosis, neuropathy, unexplained LV hypertrophy, low voltage ECG, that should raise red flags that maybe there is smoke for something else. Early identification changes prognosis drastically as we now have a lot of great therapies that fall in the domain of managing ATTR, for example, or if they have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and they need something from a myosin inhibitor from that standpoint. Now, to the pharmacist role. Let's spend some time on why this matters specifically to pharmacists. I actually think pharmacists may be the most underutilized professionals in the HFpEF care continuum. Why? Because every recommendation of this consensus interacts with medication management. We identify gaps, we optimize therapy, we improve adherence, we prevent therapeutic inertia, we monitor safety, We educate patients, we titrate therapy, we improve transitions of care, we think about one patient, we tie in their disease states, we have hypertension, we're aware of diabetes, we're aware when they have CKD, we're aware about obesity, AFib, and tie this all together with heart failure preserved ejection fraction. The patient may have 15 medications, multiple specialists, several pharmacies, and no one coordinating therapy. And this is where the pharmacist can create value. A couple of practical pearls that a pharmacist can implement immediately. Number one, screen every HFpEF patient or those that have the phenotype or the constructs of CKM or things that tie in that domain for SGLT2 eligibility, no matter what area you're in or what practice you're at. Number two, treat obesity like it's a cardiovascular disease, not just simply a lifestyle issue. It's a driving force to so many different disease states. It ties into CKM and HFpEF. It needs to be something that we all own, but treat it like it is critical from a cardiovascular disease perspective. Number three, optimize blood pressure. We've talked a lot in this podcast about how the United States fails or lags behind, and pharmacists really can do a great job of moving us beyond that 50% control threshold. Don't be shy. Be engaged in the process. Set up protocols. Work with your teams. Work with your communities. Don't accept close enough. Always be pushing. Number four, monitor renal function and potassium proactively rather than reactively, especially with these different agents that we're going to be using, such as MRAs. Number five, think beyond congestion. Think there's something else going on here. And ask yourself, what is the driving this patient's HFpEF? If we only prescribe furosemide, we've missed one opportunity. So looking forward, where is HFpEF heading? Precision medicine, phenotyping, combination therapies, different timing of starting therapy, obesity treatment, the changes that are going on in that landscape, studies of inflammation, which we had one trial report out this week with Zeus, but that was looking at ASCVD, but there is a heart failure trial underway, pulmonary hypertension, novel biomarkers, remote monitoring, artificial intelligence. This document is really less about today's therapies, but about establishing a framework for future individualized care. In closing, if I had to summarize this consensus into three take-home messages, number one, HFpEF is no longer a disease without effective treatment. We now have therapies that can improve symptoms and reduce hospitalizations. Number two, treat the patient, not just the ejection fraction. Focus on the underlying cardiometabolic phenotype. Use our tools in our toolkit, our armamentarium. And finally, pharmacists are uniquely positioned to translate the consensus into better patient outcomes. Again, thinking about medication optimization, care coordination, implementation science. Those aren't side roles anymore. They're central to HFpEF care. So thank you for joining me for another episode of the Telltale Heart, the Pharmacist Digest. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please subscribe, leave a review, and share the episode with your colleagues. As always, stay curious, keep asking questions, and remember that every medication decision tells a story. And together, we can help write better ones for our patients. Until next time, take care. Thank you.